Blog Talk Radio.
Let me make this an absolute fact. The goal is world peace. That must be our prime responsibility. We are the leader of the free world, whether we want to be or not. And therefore, we are the only ones that can preserve the peace. And to do that, we must have strength. Meeting this mission is responsibility for preserving the peace, which I believe is a responsibility peculiar to our country, that we cannot shirk our responsibility as a leader of the free world because we're the only one that can do it. Into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the super states that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
I appeared before the Congressional Committee to tell what I knew of activities, which I believe might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship.
A part of that plan, of course, is to induce the gradual surrender of American sovereignty, piece by piece and step by step, to various international organizations, of which the United Nations is the outstanding but far from the only example. The consequent willingness of the American people to allow the steps of appeasement by our government, which amount to a piecemeal surrender of the rest of the free world and of the United States itself.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful.
Okay, everybody, Joseph Gibson podcasting from Greensboro, North Carolina tonight, 8.04 p.m. on the East Coast. Show starts at 8. Some, of course, have to tune in earlier, some of the guests that I have to program in. Tonight we are going to be having a guest on the show. She's going to tell a story that imagine to be pretty lengthy because there's a lot to it. And it involves the loss of human life also. So therefore, the story in itself is going to be pretty powerful. Because, like I said, there's a loss of a child's life here. And there are facts that have to be told about this case, and there are victims. And when there's a loss of life, usually there's victims, more than one victim. And there's also a perpetrator to this that helped produce the second victim. Okay. Now, the second victim would be a veteran who served his country, who is now currently serving time in a prison that is medicated up and induced. And this is what they do in the prison industrial complex. This is what they do when they kidnap people and they don't want them to talk. And I firsthand saw this myself, and I witnessed it. And this is a very sad state of affairs for America, because we have a lot of people that are kidnapped across America today that are sitting in steel boxes, concrete boxes, steel cages, that are victims of a system that threw them overboard and threw their families overboard. Okay, and whether you want to believe it or not, that's up to you. However, when you fall prey to that system, and I've told the stories many times, you know, it could happen to anybody at any time throughout the course of a day or human life. You could wake up one morning beside the station and, you know, there's a drunk guy there and he tries to rob you. You think he's trying to rob you, and you push him down, or you smack him, or you hit him in the head with a baseball bat or something. He dies. Some states don't have self-defense laws. If you're in that state, guess what? You go to jail. And what happens if that drunk guy who happened to be somebody important? You know, or what happens if they turn it into a racial issue? I've seen that happen one time in New Haven, Connecticut. An Italian guy did it to a black guy. They turned it into a racial issue. And, you know, the NAACP got involved. The guy did a 10-year mandatory sentence, lost his fish market. You know, he was, you know, had a successful business and, you know, and was kidnapped and then made some waves inside the system and ended up on medication. And it's the whole rabbit hole nonsense started. But it can happen to anybody in many different ways or aspects. And this story here, it happened to one person, and we're going to hear that whole story here. I want this individual to start from the beginning. I'm going to let her introduce herself, where she's from, and what's happening now, and what can be done maybe to help her maybe look into this, because I know there's a lot of people that are listening tonight that will do take on these types of cases. And hopefully there's something that can be done where this young man is freed from being kidnapped. It's a horrifying story, and it's going to take a little while to tell and go into all the aspects of the story so everyone can fully understand. Most likely I won't take live calls in, you know, unless I know who the caller is, because due to the fact of the spamware that's been going on through Blog Talk and the attacks of the show that's been happening, We probably won't take unknown numbers, the only numbers that I know of that I know I can take, because I don't want to disrespect the guest. And for that matter, nobody should be disrespected when they're trying to tell a story of a magnitude like this, or any type of story for that matter, when they're spending their time here with me on this show. Okay, so, and we are still looking for another platform to broadcast, podcast on, and we will. It has to be, you know, at the same magnitude of this show, where it has grown exponentially over the years. So we are working on that. And don't forget, we do simulcast broadcast on Tuesday nights with Republic 101 Radio and ForThePeople.com. Okay? And that's out of New York with Gator. Good guy. Very popular in the music scene. But he's simulcasting with me on Tuesdays and Republic 101 Radio. So don't forget to miss that show Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, let me bring on my guest. I believe this is her right here. I hope it is. I've got three numbers here that look like hers. So let's see. Oh, is this you, my dear? Hello, are you there? Can you hear it unmuted? Can you hear me?
Yes, hello?
Yes, go ahead. I'm going to give you the floor. I'm sure you heard the introduction. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and start wherever you feel comfortable, and I'll sit back and just listen for a little while, okay?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, hi, everyone. My name is Patricia Green. I am the mother of a veteran by the name of Cohen Davis. My son and his wife took in her niece and nephew, and so getting the children, we were able to get them medical to make sure, you know, they were healthy and everything was going okay with them. Well, we found out that a baby girl was sick, and we'd been in and out of the children's hospital with her. And one particular day in October 2014, baby girl fell down a flight of stairs. So my son rushed to her and took her to the emergency room. And when they arrived, my son called me. So I took off work and I got there to see them in the emergency room. Baby girl was singing Barney. She knew who everybody was. She knew what she was going on. She became a little lethargic. They did blood work. They did CT scans. Her blood sugar came back 612. And at the time, we didn't know she was a diabetic because we were in the process of getting her medical history built up. And so then the nurse came in and they told us, you know, that they needed to leave because they needed to do certain things with her. And we found out a little while later that, you know, she had passed just real shortly after we got there and they resuscitated her. When they came back, they let us know, you know, about her blood sugar being 612. That being said, I do senior care nursing, and knowing that it was high, we found out that the hospital did not give her insulin to lower her blood sugar. And with that happening, she basically went into a diabetic coma. Her kidneys quit working due to the blood sugar levels not being treated with any insulin. And in that process, with her kidneys not working, it caused the potassium in her body to build. And as that potassium build, it began to affect her heart. So the first she passed was due to her heart stopping. And when they came to the family room to let us know, they said they had found a surgeon. And it took him about an hour and 12 minutes to get there, but they did let us know that they were keeping her comfortable. So once we found all of that out, that she didn't get the insulin, it was very upsetting. The first pass was very upsetting. They took her into surgery. They were doing exploratory surgery due to her having air in her abdomen area. I wasn't quite understanding that, because in the case in general, her diagnosis was hypoglycemic due to the diabetes, hypoglycemic cardiac arrest. So in other words, you know, she went into the coma, her kidneys didn't work, her heart stopped, and that was what took her life at that time to the neglect of the hospital. So after they came in the surgery, she had passed again, and they resuscitated her and continued to work on her. And the third time, they couldn't resuscitate her, so they came in to let us know. About 16 days later, the SWAT team, police, and everyone showed up at my house to arrest my son for suspicion of the crimes they have charged him with. So he said, you know, Mom, he says, I'm innocent. I haven't done anything wrong. So he went with them. They took him and put him in jail. He was in Sebastian County Jail about 9 months. We got to see him off and on. His attorney had called us and said that they were going to charge him with a higher charge at the time, and he needed to sign a plea deal in order to get his children, which had been taken from him. And the baby girl also had an older brother that my daughter-in-law and my son had been temporary custody of. I haven't been doing this before, so it's a little overwhelming. Anyway, so after that being said, we went.
That's okay. You just take your time. You just take your time. I know it's a hard story to go over, and you said you've never done this before. I mean, you've spoken with lawyers and everything, and of course, we'll get into that.
Right.
So we know how they are. So you don't usually get an open forum where you can talk to many different people. So just take your time. You're doing fine.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So when we went, my son was co-ordered to divorce his wife at the time due to the charges. So he thought what he was doing was going to divorce court, which ended up being the charges being filed, and he got the divorce. They went ahead and did basically, a trial. They charged him, and they convicted him in the divorce court, and in 2 days, sent him to prison. He got 60 years for the situation. So we went in, and our lawyer told us, you have to file this plea deal to get your children and Naomi's brothers out of DHS custody. And, you know, my son was, you know, he was distraught. He was crying. He was on the floor. I'd never seen him like that before. It was so unbelievable that, anyway, he signed a plea deal. So about an hour later, he got back to the jail, and I was able to go to the jail. I found out that the plea deal had already been expired like 3 days, and the judge went ahead and accepted it. I was told that we could do the Rule 37. So when we got into the Rule 37, our lawyer, the first lawyer at the time, unfortunately went to the prosecuting attorney side. So we were issued another lawyer at the time, and we didn't beat the Rule 37. the first lawyer we had, he didn't even recognize me or my name. He didn't have going on. All he could say when they asked him questions was, I don't recall. I don't recall. I'm not sure. That was the whole procedure there. So after all that being done, my son immediately got shipped off to prison. And the first year, I basically got to see him, I think, two or three times. The second year was basically finding reasons to keep him in solitary confinement. It's been 6 years now, and that's basically where he has been, is in lockdown for one thing or another that they accused him of. I just want to be able to put this out there and let people know that this does happen to families, and I pray it doesn't happen to anybody's family.
Well, how long has he been now? When the trial, we talked about this briefly now. You said something about him being sentenced to his sentence while going to divorce court.
Yeah, he didn't have a trial.
Yeah. You never had a trial. So now, you said there was a plea deal. So they forced him. Mm-hmm. Now, they tricked him into signing a plea deal. Now, when he got offered the plea deal, was there a statement of information there, or did they just have him sign some court paperwork, and then it turned out to be a plea deal? Because they do that sometimes to people where they'll say, we got some paperwork here for you to sign before you go on your next court trip, blah, 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 and you're signing paperwork, and people who have no clue whatsoever what they're signing, sign things. And that happens a lot of times, even in the simplest contract law. You know, but so you're there and they sign paperwork. Well, they'll say, this is for your property. This is for you, to turn in your property while we store it, stuff like that. It's really not. So I was just wondering, when they signed the plea deal, I mean, how did they trick him into signing a plea deal?
They told him that they were going to charge him with capital murder because the baby died at the hospital. And they said, if you sign this plea deal, we will lower it to first degree murder. And we will bring your children, which are out in the hallway. And our lawyer at the time literally let my son call me. And you could literally hear kids out in the hallway. That was kind of shocking. But
okay.
I begged him, of course, not to. You know, so. Then after
okay,
everything
so he
was
signed,
done.
So he was going to get a plea deal of first degree murder instead of taking a chance and getting the death penalty. Okay.
Exactly.
Now, gets the plea deal, okay? I mean, he thinks he's signing a plea deal. What happens next after he signs the paperwork?
Okay. After I spoke to him on the phone, an hour later, he was able to recant that and say, I don't want this. I'm now understanding what happened. And so I got a secondary lawyer, and he was able to help us to get into the Rule 37 court to recant the plea deal. And that didn't go well at
okay.
all. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So now he doesn't go to court anymore after that, right? He doesn't go to court. He doesn't appear in court any more times after that, right? Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Now, now one thing also before we continue on, did you invite anyone on to the show tonight to speak with you and talk about this case?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. Can you give me their is there area code 479?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to bring them on right now before any other 479s jump on here. Because they spoofed their caller ID. So, all right, I'm going to bring this 479 on here, cuz I know who this is, I think. Okay. So 479, welcome to the show. I guess you're a friend or relative here, and would you like to speak?
Yes. I would like to talk about some of this.
Sure.
I am the now ex-mother-in-law to this young man that's in prison, and he's been put there wrongly. He had a deal that was basically tricked on him and forced down his throat. And when he went to this hearing, people need to understand, he was not of a coherent mind. The jail itself in Sebastian County had messed with his medication so much. You could have talked this young boy into anything. He's a young man that his life was his children and his country and his wife. That was his life. He would die for any of those. So No matter whatever.
Yeah, he served his country.
That's one thing.
Excuse me. Yeah, hang on one second. I forgot to actually bring that up. Can you give me, he served in the military, correct? Can you give these years of service and what branch he served also?
You have to understand this situation. I have literally had a mental to a certain point and a lot of years.
Oh, okay, okay. Maybe his mom can. Okay,
well.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ask
mom
you.
Can
yeah,
do that.
I understand.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
Mom, you want to just give that information, then I'll come back to her so she can continue on. I didn't mean to interrupt, but we forgot to do that because there are some veterans that are listening tonight. So, and that's very important because there are veteran organizations out there that I contacted that may want to help also. Right. So, can you just give what branch he served and what years he served, if you don't mind, please, Mom, and then I'll go back to last caller.
He served the Army National Guard in the Arkansas area. When he came back from Iraq and everything, he was a sergeant, and that was, I'm thinking 2006 possibly to 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was in the military when Michaela was born. So he was over there in Iraq, and he got injured over there. So, I mean, he did a lot for the country. It was in a brief period of time. He ended up going in the military because he was a young man who unfortunately ended up getting my teenage daughter pregnant at an early age. And I need to mention this because this played against me not getting my grandchildren because of all this mess, because I made him take responsibility for the children and he ended up in the military, and they did. They both stood up and took responsibility for their house. He got the military. He was raising his family. He came home. He was redoing his home. He was trying to build a good family life for his children. He was a very protective man. He's a protector. He's not a herder. He just doesn't have it in him. Now I can't sit here saying now that this has not been formed in him because of the years he's been stuck trying to fight for his survival in prison. Because I looked at a picture of him the other day and it broke my heart. I thought that's so not the CJ that we had, that the system stole from us. That's not him anymore. Anyway, where could you put me back where I was and I'll start telling you again what happened.
Go back to. Well, I'd really like to go back to where the plea deal and everything. That's where you came in. I was talking about the plea deal and how he got screwed into thinking that he was taking a first degree.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
He was told when he went there, they from my understanding, he went to the hearing, and he'd been in jail for months, just getting jerked around with medications, with not being able to see his children. Nobody would give him any information about his children or his wife. He was not allowed to talk to his wife. He's being forced into a divorce by the system. This was not a divorce either one of them wanted. They were being forced into this by the system. And he's now here thinking, when he leaves this jail in Sebastian County, he's thinking, I'm going to my divorce hearing. I'm going to this hearing because this is what I have to do to save my children. And he goes to the hearing. I'm right down the hall with my daughter in this hearing. And they've actually called me into the courtroom to make sure that they remind me I've been muzzled by the system. If I talk on any social networking, I will immediately go to jail. So I'm praying that was released, because if it's not, I will be shortly going to jail for talking to you about this.
Okay.
Yes. And then his attorney says, well, we can't prove you didn't do anything. He never once said they can't prove you did do anything, because they couldn't. He didn't do anything wrong. But he said, you have a choice here. I can guarantee you that the system will make sure your children get completely lost in the system, and you nor your wife will ever see these children ever again, ever. Now, if you knew this man, that was it. He would have signed whatever you said the minute you turned that conversation to, how do I save my children? But, Mr. Cohen, you can save these children right now, right this moment. If you take this deal, those children are standing in the hallway, and they will immediately go down to your wife, who's in that courtroom right down the hallway. And he knew she was there because she had told him, I will be there for the divorce. So when this is going on, He says, are you sure you have my children? Well, at that point in time, over in my courtroom where I'm going through the divorce, everybody stops because there's been a sentence restructuring in the divorce hearing. So now they have to get Cohen Divorce's attorney to sign off on the new divorce agreement. The judge leaves the room. The attorneys leave the room. My daughter and I do not leave the room. And they go in the back of the room, and then they come out. One of them comes out and says, well, does somebody have Ernie Witt's phone number? And the lady at the desk says, why, he's just down the hall. We've got his number. We can get him on the phone right now. So then down the hall, my ex-son-in-law is seeing his attorney get interrupted because he's getting a phone call from my daughter, who is over here getting the divorce that he was originally brought out of the jail to do. So then his Ernie gets off the phone and says, that was Social Services. They told me the children are in the hall. Well, of course, his mind is that bad at this point. Of course he's going to sign the deal. When I leave my daughter's divorce hearing, I come outside and my son is outside, and that's another whole story, says, well, I'm here because CJ's talking about a plea. I said, CJ's not here about no plea deal. So I said, I didn't even know about it. None of this family knew about it except for who they thought needed to know about it or who would go along with it, which was the parents, attorney for CJ, and then the judge that was in there. Nobody else was notified. And
Can I ask you one question? No, after this happened, after the deal was signed and everything, did you try to motion the court for a retrial? Did you try that?
I personally could not. I had already been at the point with the DHS judge, Department of Human Services, that was stealing. Keep in mind, I have two sets of my children are going through this because this was all of my grandchildren were involved. Trisha only has two grandchildren.
They'll blackmail you.
I have five grandchildren, and I'm told right off the bat, you talk to anybody, you do anything. So every time I even went personally with Trish to see the defense attorney, and I'd tell him, I can explain every bit of this. If somebody would please just talk to me, please. And nobody would talk to me. And I would go to jail immediately by the order of DHS. And it is that strong, concreted that strong, and completely uncontrolled in Sebastian County that that's what would have happened to me. I would have gone to jail.
Okay. And now this is one thing. Okay. I know. And this is in Oklahoma, correct? Am I correct? In the state of Oklahoma?
No, Arkansas.
This is in Arkansas.
Where is it? Arkansas. Okay, that's right. I'm sorry. You're residing. My guest is residing now in Oklahoma. Okay, so in Arkansas. Okay, so I understand Arkansas and Oklahoma DHS out there is very, very corrupt, and they've done this to a lot of victims out there. So I understand where you're coming from, and a lot of people have quick answers, and they want to say, well, you know, you should have said, I want to see the law or stuff like that. But when you're a grandmother, you know, you have to put yourself in individual shoes. When you're a grandmother and you have five, six children going through the school system, or you're in a position where you have a home, a business, or a job, and you've got a lot going on, and you know these people could be very persuasive. And once you're kidnapped and you're put into the system, you have to understand once you're behind those walls, you are in big trouble. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. You're not going to escape. If you do, you're going to get caught. So, you have to understand that when you're put into these types of situations, unless you are very well connected and you know people like, for instance, even the people that I know through these underground people, or even, for instance, the guest I'm going to have on in the future, hopefully, he's in Uganda right now, the machine gun preacher. You know these people that will fight for you, that will go to bat for you, and they don't care. They go all out. But unless you know those people, you're lost. You don't really have a leg to stand on. And if you don't know the law, and you've never been in trouble with the law, and you don't know about lawyers and everything, you could really be walked all over, and people don't understand that, they don't get that. So okay, they threatened you with all this blackmail and everything. So as time goes on, if you want to go from there, as time has gone on, explain what is happening, what has happened, anything like criminal that you could think of that has happened, and what, and perhaps what you are, what you did try to do to rectify the situation, and what you are trying to do now.
Trish.
Yeah. Either or, you both Trish. Of you actually, both of you, because you both appear to be fighting. Chris can go first. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes. After the plea deal was done, and they took and put him back in Sebastian County Jail, and I knew that Ernie had switched sides and dropped the case, I went to a secondary lawyer immediately, and he and I had several meetings, and after he reviewed the case and everything, and he wrote us a letter saying that he wishes us well and that Mr. Davis could very well be telling the truth, but at the time he was not able to take the case to help us. So after he reviewed it and took our money, then he just left us also. But after, I mean, after the plea deal and everything was done, it didn't take them 2 days to get my son out of the jail and into the prison.
Wow.
So, yes, we have.
Wow.
We did. Okay, now, yeah. So I also want to say this. We did file with the Innocence Project, and I think 4 years passed. They sent me a letter and said, due to my son signing the plea deal, that they could not help us because they don't help people who sign
the Innocence. Yeah, the Innocence Project, actually, they do. They have bylaws they have to go by, otherwise they'll lose their funding and whatnot. They have contracts they have to go by. I looked that up, actually. And once you sign a plea deal, if you don't say not guilty all the way from the beginning to the end, their hands become tied then. So that's, you know, it's one of those catch things where they kind of screw you over and they limit the people that, you know, limit people they can help. So, yeah, it is true. I did look that up because I remember you telling me about that, and I did some investigating on that, and that's why they can no longer help you. But they wasted 4 years, in the meantime, though, you know. So, as you know, time is of the essence. See, everything is timeline, statutory timelines, and people don't understand. But once that timeline is over with, you're stuck. So did you try to, at this time, Ken, I would have done this. I don't know the statute of limitations in your state, ineffectiveness of counsel. Reopen the case through that.
Okay, this is what had happened. So after all of that was done, my son was told by the secondary lawyer, he could do his federal habeas on his own. So while he's incarcerated, he has got his paralegal, his criminal justice, his civil litigation, his family law, and his family tort. He's got all of his certificates through Blackstone. And he is building his case, and he did his federal habeas. So we sent it in. Now, have in mind, there were seven women, which was the attorney general, four women in her office, and a magistrate judge, and then DHS judge, all seven women denied my son's request and sent him a court document saying, we deny it and you can no longer appeal this. That is what we got stuck at. So then I talked to Mr. Fields again, and he said they can tell you all they want to tell you and they can deny you, but your son can keep doing the federal habeas a million times and keep sending and sending. So then he turned around and did his own traverse. Now, he has newly discovered evidence. I'm not quite sure what that is at this moment. I've been going over it with him through our mail letters, and they said that there couldn't be no newly discovered evidence, because if there were, it would have already been discovered. So then they had denied his.
Well, that's the
also.
Thing. That's the thing. Any new evidence would give you grounds to appeal, and it's clear that you have new evidence now that has been discovered, you know, through exculpatory whatever. You know, so you can, that will give you grounds to appeal or a motion to show cause or something like that. You know, there has to be a way to get back in there, because once they deny a motion, then your feet are back in there anyway, and a lawyer could try to get you through the appellate court system. And even if and you can also motion to to go to another, try another appeals court, you know, do another appellate system another circuit that's not covering that area, because it's obvious that they're prejudicial against you. If you can show, you know, if that new evidence shows that, which clearly through the plea deal, in no capital case whatsoever, I think that is ever ever been done before, where a person was sentenced in a divorce court proceeding on a capital case, or was issued a plea deal during a divorce court hearing, you know, at the same time. So that there makes absolute no sense. I talked to a paralegal about that, International Paralegal Services, actually, and he said he's never heard of such a thing, and he's handled cases that are that, you know, with the feds for many, many years since the late 70s. You know, you can also go through the RICO Act, and try something like that. Try to go after them that way, the hospital. Now, what is in the game now? What did the hospital gain by covering all this up? Now let's look back at it and play devil's advocate, because that's what you have to do. You have to say, why would they do this? What would be the purpose? Who is this guy, and why would they do this?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I think I might know a little better than Trish. And first, to address the one question I don't think Trish ever answered, there was a hearing at one point due to, we were saying, ineffective counsel. And Ernie Witt, who was the counsel, his only testimony was, Your Honor, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. So they basically just said we had no case because our attorney couldn't remember, and they accepted that as his testimony. They said they couldn't force him to remember things. So that was what we got as a response in Sebastian County when we tried to do ineffective counsel. And I'm like, seriously, how can someone stand there and say that? And then a judge just accept it. So that was the answer to that question. We did go that route. And I had finally reached a point this year where it was like, okay, I need to figure out, do we have any kind of hope of anything at this point? So I had contacted a group of people. They're called the, Actually Innocent Prisoners, which is a group of people that have inmates, family members who have taken a plea deal, even though they're innocent. And so I've been trying to get, I just finally got a copy of the autopsy, and I've not yet, because of COVID-19, been able to make it out to get it copied in the manner I need it copied to send to this person, and then to make sure I get a copy to all of the people involved in it. And then I'm going to have them look at the whole thing and say, hey, you know, I just need to know, because I have no legal background. What next? What is my next move? Is there any move? Is there anything? Because, you know, I have put thousands of dollars into attorneys for different things to try to help this young man. And so, you know, I'm at the point now,
one important thing, was he active still in the National Guard when this all happened? Was he still active duty in any type of way?
He was, he had become disabled because of his service. He'd gotten injured when those bomb things that go off near their ATVs. Or SUV things.
IED.
There was an IED that exploded near him.
So he was injured.
He
was declared disabled.
He was struggling. Yeah, he was struggling with that disability, and then his PTSD and other things. And to play devil's advocate with the hospital, we want to say, why would the hospital do this to anybody? That would be my gut. The hospital, this little girl had been seen by this hospital a couple of times. Two personal times where I went with the little girl to the hospital. And they adamantly refused to look at her for anything that we considered a worry, which was when CJ and them got him. She couldn't go to the bathroom correctly. She was losing her hair. She couldn't eat correctly. I mean, this little girl was just literally fading in front of our eyes, and we were screaming for help at this hospital. And so by the time CJ and them rescued this little girl from her parents, she was a frail child. I mean, I would hug her, and she would just bruise. And my daughter and CJ had finally gotten her into Children's Hospital, and we had a follow-up appointment with them 2 days after she fell. I mean, that was, we missed it by just, you know, and it's like to have been so close. The hospital has to garner some protection here. And then the things they did that they didn't stabilize her, they didn't, you know, they used improperly sized medical equipment on her. They, you know, And you have to keep in mind,
so
I
they were facing a huge liability claim, basically a huge liability lawsuit.
They
just came out and said, "Man, we messed up big time," right?
Exactly.
That's basically what they were looking at. Okay.
And the Department of Human Services was facing the same thing with these particular children because they'd been called out on these children on several different occasions already and had done nothing.
Okay. And,
so,
and making false allegations and making false allegations, for instance, like, you know, where they were sexually assaulted and stuff like that, that's been known to happen a lot in the state of Oklahoma and Arkansas, mm-hmm. a lot. Let's see. Well, have you tried? Somebody sent me a message. Actually, they said if he was honorably discharged from the military, the American bar can provide legal services to him. That's what somebody's stating inside my chat room. Actually, one of the few people that have any common sense in the chat room. Actually, so, but yeah, they're saying that the American bar can assist him. So, did you try looking into that by any chance?
I never heard of that one.
No, I never heard of that either.
Okay.
Nonsense.
Well,
but you were talking about the hospital.
That's where we'll go.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do have a comment on the hospital question. We found out during this process that the hospital had lost their trauma license a year before this even happened. They did not lifelight her, which they should have done. We also found out the surgeon that we waited an hour and 12 minutes on had 3 open malpractice suits against him. The ER doctor had open malpractice suits against him, and so did the head nurse and two nurses, the head nurse and another nurse. That whole hospital had active malpractice suits against them, but yet they used all of the people that were in the suits.
Okay.
That may have been one of the reasons they chose to cover.
Well, that's a lot of – yeah, make sure you bring that information up to the American bar. And bring up, hopefully you ladies are keeping a journal of everything that happens and transpires, an active journal. And it doesn't have to be notarized or anything like that. That is admissible in any trial or court or sentencing hearings. And it's evidence. So, like, for instance, even you talking to me tonight, you should write that down and say, this was said, that was said, I spoke to this person. Because all that is evidence down the road, somewhere down the line, which hopefully we pray you can get a new trial or go back to court and have an honest, fair hearing this time. Or somebody can maybe get the conviction overturned.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm asking for.
That we can prove.
Well, that's
what
we're going to try to do for you. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. In this situation. Yes.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. I'm going to take one caller here. I do recognize the phone number. I'm going to take one caller here and see if they want to chip in and maybe give some advice. Only callers that I know or who I think I know, but if you play any nonsense, I'll hang up on you right away. 717, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing tonight, ma'am?
We're good.
I'm actually doing there are several people in Oklahoma and Arkansas that are fighting these people, even with hospitals. If they're in on a team with DHS, CPS, they won't help you. There is a gentleman that I know in Fort Smith, Arkansas, who is helping me with my case. I had gotten my stuff filed finally, and now all he's doing is critiquing it, in a matter of speaking. But his name is Mike Gages. If you want to look him up on Facebook, Center for Judicial and Family Integrity, I think I kind of got it backwards, but he actually is fighting CPS. They have protested CPS, and I'm pretty sure he would be able to help you, as well as so many other people in Oklahoma that are against these people as well, and their fraud and withholding of evidence. So I don't know if you would like to take up that route. I can get these people to reach out to you.
That would be wonderful. I
appreciate that. Send me, you're on my Facebook with me, so send me the information and I will send it to her as soon as you possibly can. And that's one avenue to go. I'm going to take another caller here who wants to make a comment. Also, I know who this caller is, so I'll take his call. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello. Hey, good evening, Joe. I'm just going to take 1 minute. Ladies out there who were interested in an appeal up on grounds of jurisdiction can be done at any time, before, during, and after a conviction. It can be done at any time, up on appeal, before the trial, at any time. Jurisdictional grounds are constitutional, and you do have a valid claim. Go get them. And, hey, get in there and vote for Joe Gibson coming up on this doggone election in the Senate in North Carolina. I'm done.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. That was a good point, what he did actually make right there. I'll mute you, Mark. Go ahead. And if you want to come back in, send me a message. The jurisdictional claim, I should have mentioned that also. That's a very interesting. But last caller prior to you, yeah, send me that information. I will send it to them. And also the American Bar, look into that. So you've gotten some new avenues there to try to go down right now. However, while your son is being held inside prison right now, there's also another matter happening and going on. Obviously, his life is in danger. He's being medically induced in a medical state of a coma, basically. That's what they do with a lot of these inmates. They put them in these medical units or psych wards, mental health units, and they keep them on medication, you know, 3 times a day, 4 times a day. And they're walking around doing the Thorazine shuffle there, or whatever you want to call it. You know, and they don't know where they are or what they're doing. Or they're released in the general population and they're targeted for attack. That happens
a
lot also.
He has been attacked, yes, sir.
So what prison is he in right now? Because I do have people that are listening that fight for inmates out there. What prison or jail is he in so we can make record of that right now on my show and it can be documented?
Yes, sir. He is at Wichita River Correctional Facility in Malvern, Arkansas. It is a medical facility. When you talk about medications, they took him off all of his VA meds and put them on what they wanted him to have. And we have been fighting his medical. I have spoke to George Williams, which is the head of that place over there, but he doesn't seem to be helping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right about the situation.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we have to, that's another good subject right there. They're disagreeing with what the VA prescribed, and a lot of these inmates that are in prison today, you know, that are former vets. You know, and these prison officials are treating them with the wrong meds, and these poor veterans are suffering, you know, and some of these veterans don't belong in there either because of the post-traumatic stress disorder they suffer, and it's just insane what they have to go through. So that's something right there. That's another issue right there. Yeah, you want to talk a little bit like that? If there's anything else you want to bring up, we still got plenty of time here left. I don't want to beat the subject all the way to death until we're going over the same thing again. But I want to make sure that you get all your information out there that you want to talk about. So if there's anything else that you could think of that needs to be addressed, by all means, go ahead.
Well,
I'll go
you
to
know,
Chris
my
first,
big concern
I guess.
Is when.
Go Chris, ahead, Robin. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
My big concern with most all of this is the fact, you know, grandparents in Arkansas, you know, all this stuff that went on, I should have been notified as a very active member involved in this entire thing. I mean, these were all of my grandchildren. And in one day's time, I lost every grandchild I ever had. And all I've ever had returned to me is two. That's hard. I have two out there. I have no idea where they're at, who they're with. Are they okay? They will not answer or respond to any questions I have. I'm not allowed. And this was after I did hire an attorney to fight for me. And he never did. All he did was take my money. He didn't do anything for me. And he just led me along a path until I was broke. That's not fair. These children that are out there now should be with a family member, especially with the loss of their sister. A stranger had to tell them that, and that's not right. This entire thing by Department of Human Services was wrong. It was approached wrong. They should have been there to help us get through this. Instead, they set out to do everything in their power to destroy our entire family to save themselves. And I just cannot believe we still continue to let a government run like this. The government's aware of it all and do nothing.
You're absolutely correct. And that brings me up to, one person did send me a message. I don't know what your feelings are towards, the politics out there in the world and whatnot, but Donald Trump claims to be a big advocate of the veterans out there. Why not have you tried writing to the president, office of the president of the United States? Maybe, I'd be writing letters to everybody I possibly could
attention. I have written a letter to, there is not one governor, senator in the state of Arkansas. The last two presidents, if they stand there and tell you, we didn't know anything about this, never heard about this, they're going to be lying to you. I wrote to every judiciary on the judicial committee, and I got every letter sent back unopened, every one of them.
I also wrote.
DHS, I have written judges. I have written the police that put him there. I've written the prosecutor. And I still, to this day, write them. And I say, I don't see how you can live with yourself knowing there is this man being destroyed in prison because of your actions or inactions to actually truly investigate this crime against my family. So, yes, I've written, I've preached, I've begged, I've pleaded, I've almost crawled across rock. And all in my I've gotten is either spit on, threatened with jail time, or every dime I've ever had taken by someone.
Well, ever threaten you. I'll tell you right now, nobody could ever threaten you with jail time for pursuing your constitutional rights.
Have.
I mean, as soon as the first person does, I'd say, would you care to put that in writing? Or can you say that one more time and I'd be recording them? Because that's totally absurd.
That was in the family courts, and that is completely confidential, and they will not allow you to get into their records, and it should have been documented. That judge looked me right in the face and said, if I talk about this case, if I hint towards this case, in any type of media enterprise, you will go immediately to jail, ma'am.
Yeah, they can. While the case is going on, they can put it. They have been known to put gag orders on cases. I remember when I did the Pelletier case. Yeah, when I did the Pelletier case, once after she came on my show, the whole family did, and that was right then. They did a media gag order actually right when she was on the Glenn Beck show actually. So it went on my show first, and then went on Glenn Beck, and then boom, that was a gag order. So. So they do that, and that's totally unconstitutional. I'm surprised it hasn't been challenged, or if it's not sitting in the Supreme Court's hands right now, I don't know why. But Mark, want to make another comment? Mark, go ahead. I'm going to unmute your microphone. Go ahead. There you go.
Yeah, doggone it, Joe. I forgot what I was talking about. But I wanted to know if there were psychological evaluations done on the person in question. If there were not psychological evaluations before they made their determinations to even bring this person to trial, you have grounds for dismissal. Not only that, but upon these jurisdictional grounds, you have that undisputed right. And all these senators have been taking bribes and kickbacks. They've been taking bribes and kickbacks, and they also are heavily vested in the penitentiary. And it's lottie-dottie and every damn body inside the penal penitentiary that gets them a profit for their return. Understand this, and we understand the nature of the beast. And I'm done, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Thank
let me
you.
Comment
appreciate
back
it.
To
You're
him.
Absolutely correct.
Let me chat back to him for a moment. Okay. We were told that they were doing the mental vow, that was fine. I asked if they were doing it through the VA. They said no, he is no longer there, and they used the state person, which said he was 100% capable of going to trial that we didn't have. So that's what I wanted to say about that man's comment.
All right. All righty. All right. Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate you coming on. 717, I didn't know if you still had anything else to say. 717, anything else you want to add? I muted you there just real quick. But go ahead, 717. Do you still got something you want to add?
I asked her a question when she was in the middle of talking about that. I asked her if they said her file was unorthodox.
I'm sorry, what?
When you were talking earlier about the stuff that you had filed, who said your stuff was unorthodox?
The Attorney General, Leslie Lethbridge of Arkansas, and Beth Deer, which is a magistrate judge.
Okay.
Got that?
I only know a lot of the stuff that you're going through because I'm dealing with it myself. So, and I just wanted to say I definitely was agreeing with Mark. What they are doing is wrong. And, you know, a lot of us, again, are stepping up. And I'm just going to tell Joe that he can give you my number because he does have it.
Okay.
And as well as I will get a hold of this gentleman. So he gives Joe information as well. And he's in Fort Smith, Arkansas. So he would definitely be able to help. And my son is actually in really close to where you're from. So
okay.
The foster home he was at, he said abused him. And they did shit about it.
Yes, exactly. That's what happened. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your input on this.
Yes, ma'am. I definitely want to try and help you the best I can from here in Pennsylvania right now. So, and maybe hopefully would love to meet up with you when I get back down that way.
That would be wonderful.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing your story. I know it's hard.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for the expert joining me there, 717. I'll give them your information. Maybe they'll reach out, you know, talk to you, and you could hook up and maybe give each other some advice. You know, that's one important thing, too. People that are going through the similar problem, you know, people out there need to know that they're not going through the same thing. And suffering alone, that there are other people out there suffering. And if everyone is to unite and come together, you know, and battle the system and pull out what's corrupt about it and expose the corruptness, trust me, they'll have very little power after that, you know, if we could shed light onto darkness. And that, you know, shedding light onto darkness. Remember, darkness has no place for light. So a little bit of light will do a lot of damage to darkness. And that's all you really have to do. So that's basically all that I'm trying to do here is making sure that these stories get told for the people out there so they can really understand, you know, that there's other people out there fighting the same fight. So do the best you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, do the best you can and know that there's people out there that are willing to listen. That's what's so important. But now one more thing though on the jail thing, are you able to visit with him now, your son, or is he allowed visitors? I mean, what's going on with that aspect of the time that he's serving right now?
Before the corona situation, I have not seen my son. This is going on the third year. Like I say, they are finding things to keep him locked up by himself. And last October, supposedly, he was supposed to have made homemade fireworks, and that's why I haven't seen him for a year now. And 2 years before that was because of a situation we talked about on the telephone. They didn't like it. They wouldn't let me see him, so I have not seen my son in 3 years. We do communicate in letters, though.
Yep. Okay,
we were
well,
talking
that's good.
About reaching
that's good.
Out to other avenues. When they had told Miss Robin about the gag order, I wasn't with her at that time, so I didn't know till shortly after. So I had emailed the Veterans TV in Little Rock, THV 11, information, 4029 in Fort Smith, 4029 Fayetteville, Little Rock, and Channel 5 in Fort Smith and other stations, and every one of them denied interviewing me and letting us tell our story. They said they read it.
Yeah, unless money is involved.
Yeah.
Once the case is overturned, I guarantee you, if you get your case into court somehow, where you're suing them, and then the corporate news media will pay attention because money is involved. Then, see, the corporate news media only reports on things that really affect the Federal Reserve and money. You know, when there's money involved, then they'll be happy to report on it. Like when my case was was going on years ago in Connecticut. Okay, when I was suing when I was going to court with the Attorney General's office and whatnot, millions of dollars was at stake. And you know what happens when, you know, millions of dollars is at stake, that, you know, the news media automatically picks it up. And then, of course, you'll have friends all out of the woodwork. You know, you'll have your family members coming out of, you know, from all across the country. Hey, come live with me, you know, and they're going to give you houses and cars and, you know, and you're going to be their best friend. And, you know, you could do whatever you want. And then as soon as, you know, as soon as they find out, you know, you lost your case or something, then wham, you know, you're all done. So, but, so right. You know, be careful. But, you know, but yeah, the news media you know, leech onto anything that has to do with money, and then all the crooked people also, they will do that. But now, you said because of this corona thing, you're unable to see your son now and everything, but do you guys correspond in writing at all? I mean, what was the last thing that, you know, is he holding up strong, or what's going on?
The last several letters weren't very well. He was very discouraged. But now I did get a letter the other day. I don't know how it happened. By miracle and grace of God, I got to talk to him the other day on the phone, and I happened to have $25 on there. And so we actually got 2 hours, because we got 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes. And so by the time the phone call was done and we spent some time, he sounded better.
And that's another thing, too. That's another thing, too, people need to understand. But they have a racket in these prison systems about with these telephone systems. I mean, it's a huge racket. I mean, they charge, you talk about charging for a telephone call.
2 hours?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
It's insanity.
I was told once he gets out of solitary confinement, gets out of hole, which will probably be December, we can start video chats as long as he stays out of trouble.
Now, wait a second. He's in solitary confinement until December? How long has he been in there now?
Probably 2 years.
Solitary confinement.
And then he'll get out for 30 or 40 days, and then they'll find a reason. They'll put him back in there, and he'll get out 30 or 40 days. And now he's back in there until December of this year for supposedly making homemade fireworks.
Okay. Now, let's analyze. This is very important, too. What's the conditions like that he tells you that the solitary confinement is like for him? What are the conditions like? Like, for instance, how long is he in his cell for per hour per day?
Basically 24 hours, the way I understand it, in his letters and him speaking to me on the phone. And there's no air circulation. He has a little bit of window for a dinner tray, and that's it.
Yeah, I know about those things. Yeah, they have very small windows, and then they've got the little slots in the door for where they eat and whatnot. And now, is he in a single cell or double cell?
Well, right now he's by himself, so I honestly don't know. I just know he's by himself.
He's probably in a
solitaire single cell 23 hours a day. He gets and can have 30 minutes to an hour out.
Yes.
And he's done that now. Actually, most of the bulk of his jailment, he has ended up being in solitaire. First they said it was for suicide watch. And then they said it was because he was not listening, because he wouldn't go out and work. Well, he can't work because of his back injury, because of the bomb. And they said he just had to suck it up and work, and he can't. And so then they put him in solitary confinement because he refused to work. It's just been crazy.
While he is in his cell, does he have access to... Like, for instance, in the state of Connecticut, inmates, when they're in administrative segregation, after the first 30 days, they're allowed to have a TV in their cell. They're allowed to have a radio.
No, sir, he can't even get commissary.
Wow.
He only gets what little food they give
him. Oh, my Lord, he's doing hell then. Yeah, he's in hell then, because that's the hardest time you can do right there. That's just all you have is your sheet, your mattress, and if you're on suicide watch, you don't even get a sheet, and your flip flops and a jumpsuit. That's all you get, a steel toilet, you know, that's all you get.
He was actually supposed to get out of it in May, but unfortunately, with there being no toilet paper and his shoes falling apart, he tore the sheet, and because he defiled their property, he's going to stay till December. Because he
the bottom line is, what's he supposed to do all day? Tear a sheet. Hell,
right.
You know, you have nothing to do all day in there. What do you expect an individual to do? Is this supposed to be
exactly.
the Department of Corrections? I mean, you know, what are you supposed to do in a concrete box every single day? And for people out there that are listening right now, if you don't understand what solitary confinement is, I want you to walk into the smallest room in your house, most likely your bathroom, okay? That would be a good way. Take the shower out of there in the bathtub and put a bed there, because that's what it is. You have a toilet, a sink, and your bed. And pretend staying in your bathroom all day long, and then sleeping in your bathroom, and then waking up in your bathroom, and then spending every single day in your bathroom for the next 30 days. And then imagine not knowing when you're going to get out of your bathroom, and then year after year, month after month. What does that do to the human brain? What does that do to your body? You know, no sunlight. You know, it's terrible. It's torture.
And currently, they're talking 60 years of that for him.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
What they're currently discussing.
Yeah,
that's absolutely insanity.
I was going to say, even in the case situation where it talks about his charges, there is no evidence whatsoever in the case. And the autopsy doesn't match the medical history of the situation, zero at all, according to the case of what we dealt with in her medical history and what was in, you know, the medical history shows that she could have been secondary malnourished. That's what the organ transplant surgeon said about her. But then the autopsy says she was a well-nourished, well-developed female child.
Well, isn't that interesting? You see, isn't that interesting, though? Isn't it interesting? We throw this scenario out there. You got CPS involved because the child is malnourished, doesn't have the, isn't getting the proper medical attention, and is being psychologically or whatnot abused and everything else that CPS gets involved in. But yet we throw our men and women into where? The same situation. You know,
right.
Where they're malnourished, psychologically tortured, and you know, and beaten, beat up and tortured. So, you know, here we are saying they're playing good cop, bad cop with society. Society is the sheep and the sheeple that just really have no rights whatsoever. We're just being pawned against each other. And then the agents, are just destroying the both. And I said that in the opening of this show. There's two victims. You know, there's two victims here. You know, you had one that lost their life, and you got one now that's being punished, that's being tortured with their life. You know, and that right there is a darn shame. And there's no, and that is not, and we're supposed to live in a modern society, a society that has, you know, understands things and that understands, you know, the human life. We're supposed to evolve as a society. No way. If anything, we're devolving and going backwards. Because that's absolutely insane that a man, and how are you supposed to defend yourself, you know, through a proceeding living in those types of conditions? You know, you're automatically guilty until proven innocent. We know that. You know, everyone jokes around about that, but it's not a joke. It's just, it's insane. It's totally insane. I wouldn't let him take me alive, you know, at that point. You know, knowing I faced those conditions, the heck with it. You know, I'd rather go take a nice long nap. You know, go see Meet My God. I mean, I don't know. That right there is hell. That's just hell.
He has wrote several times in his letter that he wished he was back in Iraq and protecting people than where he is at right now, you know. And that's sad, considering conditions over there. Yes, he's wrote that in his letter several times.
Well,
this young man
has mentally gone to that deep, that dark place. He's gone to that place several times. Pulled him out of it.
Exactly.
But he does have those days of, you know, just kill me. Just, this can't be it, you know. So we try hard to keep the spirits up. And I want everybody listening here, because, you know, either if you hear these names, you know, you're going to probably go out and look and look at this man. The man you see now is not the man this happened to. The man you see now is the man who has been beaten down, wore down by
that they have created. Exactly.
He's, you know, I see him and he's just, you can see it in him. He's exterior, he's built up because he has to abort because where he's living now. But if you knew him the way we knew him, you could see his eyes that are just, he's just not he's just losing hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it breaks my heart that, because, you know, I tried to talk him, you know, when he said the military was his choice for a career. I'm like, CJ, no, you're so young. Don't go over there. You're just barely 18. No, they, you know, they promised me they wouldn't send me straight to the front lines. And then I just, now, CJ, you know, I've
right,
been around
that
a
was
long time. And you can't always believe these things. It's like talking to a used car salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah, the moment he turned 18.
Yeah. And now that I got you,
they took him that very next day to Iraq.
I wanted to ask a question about that, actually.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, you said you were against him going into the military. Now that all this has happened, you probably say, I wish I told him to just go ahead and stay in there, huh? I mean,
right.
You know, maybe this
yeah,
would never have happened.
My mind is his mother. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a lot of things I go back. There's a lot of things I go back and have to deal with for this whole situation. I'm not CJ's mom. I'm his ex-mother-in-law. But he was a son to me. I'd known him since he's 16 years old. This whole thing was a tragedy that hit my family, the worst. And we've never, ever been given the chance or allowed to completely heal from it all. So it's like an open wound for me, at least, that's constantly dragging me downward. And I have so much guilt and just devastation over where this young man is, because he's there because of my grandchildren, two of which were not even his children. He had taken these children in to save them from, you know, my son and his wife.
Right.
And it just seems like the whole cosmos of it all is this is how he's thanked. So, yeah, I'm thinking, well, maybe if I'd have taken the children in instead of having them take them in. But I was thinking younger parents, you know, they could grow up together. The siblings were all the same age. And there's just such a huge backstory to all of this that nobody has ever wanted to hear the truth on, that is very convoluted, very difficult to follow. And I know that's part of the problem, but the way it was all handled by our system was wrong, and it wronged so many people and destroyed lives, and now it just goes on and keeps destroying lives while we're all just kind of laying here as the shrapnel left over from this
exactly.
move that they were able to make so much money off of. And
what were the original? One person asked me again. What were the original charges here that he was charged with? What were the original charges?
Suspicion of rape and first-degree murder. Capital murder. I'm sorry. Suspicion of rape and capital murder. And then the plea deal, yes. And the plea deal went suspicion of rape and first-degree murder. That's what I brought that up about.
All right, so he was charged with suspicion of rape and capital felony murder. Okay.
Yes.
Suspicion of rape. What's that? What kind of charge is that? Suspicion. Your suspicion. That doesn't make any sense there.
Because you're already suspicion.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, because
it's just crazy.
They based that on the fact that they said because she looked as if something could have possibly at one point happened to her, but there was no semen or DNA of his anywhere around her, so we can suspect it. But we can't say he did it.
Right.
There was.
Yeah.
This has all been explained to me by all these idiots, and I still don't agree with them. I'm like, but you're leaving out so many facts about what happened to her before. Yes, something horrible happened to my granddaughter that to this day, if I could take the man out and hang him and castrate him, I would. That man's dead.
Right.
He got away with molesting hundreds of children in his lifetime. I'm just grateful he's now dead. And I hate to say it, I'm a morbid person, but I'm kind of happy with how he died. He died alone and was in his little trailer home for 3 weeks before he was ever found. And I'm okay with that because of what he's done to children. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So if it was ever any shred of evidence that CJ had ever, entire life, ever hurt a child, I'm the type of person that I'm done with you. If you hurt a child, I'm finished.
Exactly. I'm his mother. I feel the same way. If I thought that my son did something like that, I would not support him at all. But see, when we were in the ER room and I was the last one in the room with baby girl, the nurse came in and she goes, "We need you to leave. We're going to cat her." And I said, no, I'm not leaving. And she called the security people to come in to make sure me and my son were out of the room. I do senior care nursing. They used an adult catheter on that two-year-old child. I threw a fit. The police took me out. So if there's any suspicion or a suspected tear going in, it was the adult catheter with the way baby girl was handling things. And that was the sad part about it.
Yeah.
That's where the rape part,
yeah,
suspicion of, yes. And we got a bill from the insurance for $850 saying that the catheter was not authorized for the patient. So I was very upset,
yeah,
when I recognized what they were doing to her. Not to mention them dragging
this was,
me out.
This was a little child of very frail health,
yes,
who took a tumble down a flight of stairs and landed on a tricycle pedal in her groin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some damage. And we already knew she had a bleeding disorder. We knew she had a tissue disorder. We just didn't know how to treat her yet. We didn't know what the doctors were going to come back with yet and say, hey, this is what we can do for her.
Right. So when they had put her in surgery, they knew that they had become aware that she had the bleeding disorder where her blood wouldn't clot. So instead of giving her blood clotting medicine to do surgery and stabilize her, they didn't do that. She bled out. That was another reason that, you know, of her passing. They gave her 300 units of blood instead of clotting what her natural blood was. So that's another thing that, you know. And the medications that they sedated her with were almost adult doses. It was not recommended for children under 10 years old. It paralyzed her and she stopped breathing.
Well, this was the same hospital when I took her, too, that the doctor, because I was trying to figure out what was going on with her because she was having problems going to the bathroom. Like I said, when I went to the emergency room with her, the doctor just looked at me and he just literally put his hands up and he says, I will not touch a child that age. There is nobody in this entire town of Fort Smith that can medically treat a child in any surgical or blockage issues of that age. We do not have a surgeon that can do anything for a child this young. But then when my ex-son-in-law showed up with her at this emergency room, instead of air flighting her anyway somewhere, they decided to treat her, although 2 weeks before they told me, we don't have anybody in this area anywhere that is qualified to do any kind of medical procedure that has to cut her open. And I'm like, seriously, what do you mean you're going to do surgery on her? You just told me 2 weeks ago there was nobody qualified in this area to treat or look at her. And that's why you sent me to Children's Hospital.
Right.
So, there's just a lot of stuff going on here that, again, we don't have the knowledge of how to get it, where to get it, you know, and you have helped us greatly now.
Yes.
But, you know, what are our rights? What can we do? Who can I go to? And that's where I'm working with this one group with is tell me where to go, what to do, because I'll sure do it. I just need to know what to do, you know. And
another
thank you.
Thing that brought to my attention in the medical part, when they had done the CT scan, instead of doing it, you know, basically with the dye for a few hours to find out what's going on with her, they did emergency exploratory surgery, which, like I say, it took an iron 12 minutes to get that emergency surgery going because she had air in her abdomen. That's all it showed. And even the surgeon mentioned when he cut into her, that there wasn't any blood there, no old blood from falling down the stairs and getting hurt, you know. And he said he cut her again, and there was a new blood. And then once he got to a certain area, he realized that her duodenum, which happens to be her intestines, were shredded. And the only way that could happen was if she fell and hit something or if somebody laid her on her stomach and stomped her back, that would cause her intestines to shred. That was the reason for the surgery, was exploratory. I honestly think the surgeon screwed up and did it myself. And then everybody got together and says, oh, we got all these malpractice suits. Let's do this now.
And we have a young man here. And well, this is it. But let's say it all, Trish. And we have a young man here who we found a social media picture where he's getting high. So this is the disposable people. We can get rid of this person in Fort Smith. This is Fort Smith and Sebastian County's mentality. I'm sorry. I've lived here long enough. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the disposable ones, and we can't mess up our money trend, so he's got to go. And that's how they closed the case so that the man could get reelected.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That's all the truth. No, that's the truth. Yeah, exactly.
So So he's serving 60 years because he was on Facebook in the town of Fort Smith. And if you look up Fort Smith, we are the number one homophobic town. We are the number one, you know, in the biggest Baptist belt, the most judgmental, the most cruelest people live in this area. It's crazy. I can't believe them half the time because I'm like, there's a Baptist church in every corner. How can you people be so mean? You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's Fort Smith, and I mean, it's in data. It's in data everywhere. You can find data about Fort Smith, Arkansas, and it's not good. And yes, I would love to move from here. Unfortunately, my grandchildren still stay here because my one daughter stays here, and I have two elder parents, 80 years old, who, yeah, you're not going to get them to move at 80 years old.
No, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Right.
80, but I don't even want to try to pack up what they own.
Well, I want to give you, ladies, if you'd like, I would like to give you, both of you, give some closing thoughts to the show. Take 2 minutes, closing thoughts, and I'll wrap it up for tonight because I want to wrap it up on the note from your show. I don't want to start anything new here. I want to make sure this show is solo just for you guys. So take 2 minutes to wrap up whatever you want to say, and then I'll wrap it up, okay?
Okay, I'll go real quick first so you can go. I just want to thank you all for listening to me. And just be aware when you are, you know, if you ever run across anybody, this is a true story. This is not something we made up. It can happen. It can happen to anybody, anywhere. You may think you're completely protected and you've dotted all your I's and crossed your T's, but somebody can still twist it and twist your words to something else. My big word for the day is document, document, document. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Wow,
right,
that was pretty
ahead,
much kind of what I was
going to
say. I was going to kind of say the same thing that she's saying, but I also want to tell you guys is keep your faith in God because he will get justice for this. And I just want to thank everybody for listening and taking time, you know, to care enough to listen and give us your insight. And we appreciate everything that you have said and done this evening, and it will truly help us. And thank you, Ms. Robin, for being there.
Thank you so much. So everyone, yeah. You're welcome. And so tonight's show, definitely go to the archives, download it, and save it. And we'll put you in touch with people to help you out. And, of course, we'll stay in touch with each other and continue to fight your case. And it's good to know good people like you that are out there standing up to the system and just aren't laying down saying, well, this happened to me. There's nothing we could do about it. You know, continue fighting. Continue doing the right thing. So that's it for tonight, everybody. God bless. Take care. Understanding the times in which we live today. Take care. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Good night.